If you don't like what we tell you to believe in, we'll kill you.
Is tedious on the right stuff.biz.
Well, hello and welcome to the Daily Show number 934.
This is the good stuff, the right stuff.
This is hour one. Hour two is in the future, waiting for us. We just have to pray and catch up. It'll be there. Oh, this is the first day of the new paywall regime. This is going to be the only content available to free fads, and it's going to have a bunch of weird, annoying commercial interruptions in it. So you should go get a paywall. But I won't bother with that any further because you'll hear plenty of calls to action about that throughout this next hour. Just because this is the first time, reiterate to our paid subscribers, the full show will be available both as videos and as an MP3 download on the website and also in the paywall RSS feed that you use to access Strike and Mike, Mike and Warren, and the Friday show. So go get this show there. Don't go to the free fag feed. The free fag feed is going to have the free fag version of the show that's going to be incomplete and have commercials in it. So, with that said, hi, Alex. We already recorded hour two. Mike's on the road, and he had to get back on the road to get the rest of the way home, so we did that early. We did that first. And now we're gonna shitpost our way through hour one, even though hour two is already done. We're just going to talk about things, shit that doesn't matter.
It's appropriate. Yeah. Well, there's things that do matter. Like, I'm getting my Halloween movie list together.
Yeah.
It's in August. I'm getting it prepared. I'm going to try to not watch crappy movies this year and just have nothing but good stuff in my list and my recommendation. I got six categories.
Okay.
And I'm going to have six movies in each category. That way you can roll a D6 to pick a category and pick a movie.
Wow, a D6. Yeah.
We'll see how long I do that before I just abandon it. I'm like, no, I want to watch this.
We're just going to talk about movies today the whole time.
We're just going to talk about movies for an hour, because I wanted to shitpost a little bit about vampire movies.
Oh,
because vampire movies, honestly, there's not many of them that are very good, and they didn't start getting good again until 1985 with Fright Night. So up until that point, it was sort of like this exploitation sort of franchise or genre, and prior to that, you had what, the MGM classics like Dracula, and that was it. And then Fright Night comes along, and it kind of like reinvigorates the genre. And then you get The Lost Boys, you get Near Dark, and both of those are really good. And then Anne Rice kicks in the 90s,
yeah, Anne Rice.
And they go right back to being shitty again. And then you get like a little blip, 30 Days a Night comes along, that's kind of cool.
Wait, are you not liking Interview? You throwing shade at Interview? I'm an Interview enjoyer. I like that. I'm okay with it. I like that. I like Bram Stoker's Dracula is my favorite vampire movie ever.
It's on my list.
Yeah. That's, I mean, just
it's
the
sort
best.
Of mandatory, but is it like objectively a great movie? Is it really a horror? I don't know.
I love it. I'll watch it anytime. If it pops into my head.
I'm going to watch it. It's going to get seen.
But...
Yeah, now you got me thinking about that. Do I actually like that Anne Rice adaptation? There's stuff I like that's
I've never read any of her stuff. I hear it's like she's basically made vampires like these like gay romantic fucking lover boys or whatever.
Yeah.
So I'm not interested in that. But I liked the film. I thought the film was pretty good. It has all those giant 90s stars in it, which is pretty funny. But yeah.
But I mean, that sort of goes back to Fright Night, though, because that was the movie where they started to portray the vampires as being... sort of like seductive or something, but they also had the horror element, and then eventually they just dropped that. Like, no, vampires are just they're just gay and they seduce you. That's what they do.
Yeah, we need to return to like toxic masculinity amongst vampires. I mean, it used to be basically, let's just face it, they were just Jewish sex predators, because they always say that like the vampire meme is anti-Semitic anyway. These bloodsuckers that come and like take like innocent people. It's like, yeah, they're just Jewish sex predators. It's like Count Weinstein. That's the second Weinstein appearance in this show, but you'll have to wait till the Earth catches up. So you catch up with the time, space-time continuum, in which we already did hour two, where we talk about Weinstein for a minute, but it's the same old thing. But yeah, Fright Night's really scary. I remember being terrified of it when I was a kid, when I first saw it. Like, I couldn't finish it. I was like, oh my God, this is horrible. But what else was there? Like, usually, like, Dracula, like, the story of Dracula has been adapted into so many comedy, like, parodies of itself. I don't know. It's really, like, wasn't there, like, Blackula or some shit? And then they do a Dracula that was just a nigger. Like, there's all these comedy adaptations. Do you count Blade in your list? I can't count Blade. I think that's just cape shit, right?
Blade is in a weird place for me because it's like a guilty pleasure. I think that's the category it goes into. Blade and Blade 2, it's like, yeah, I'm entertained by them. Are they good? Not really.
I never saw either of those. I think I've seen some of Blade.
I don't know. I'm almost hung up on, like, what's the sixth Halloween, vampire film going to be? Because they got the good ones in there. I got to find something else.
Just use the Wesley Snipes film where Robert De Niro is trying to kill him and he's a baseball player. pretend he's a vampire and that, like, Robert De Niro isn't a crazed fan. He's Van Helsing. Robert De Van Helsing.
Oh, man, there's been so many better
movies. What was that movie called?
All these bad films.
Yeah.
Because they had Van Helsing, and it's terrible. It's like the CGI menace has just fully taken over at this point.
Was that an offshoot of the Underworld films? Because Underworld, that's another shitty, like, cape shit vampire thing, isn't it?
Yeah. I don't know where Underworld came from. It seems like, are they still doing sequels to it? It seemed like for a while there, every year you get an Underworld sequel.
That feels like a franchise they won't let die, no.
I remember the first one being sort of okay. Like, oh, it's the Matrix plus vampires.
How many are there? I'm on the Wikipedia. They did Underworld Blood Wars 2016 is the most recent one. What does it say? Future. September, Honey Beckinsdale cast out and appearing in a sixth film. July 2021, she stated she was not opposed to reprising the role. Reprise. How do you say that word when it's... Because you would say reprise, right? Reprise? That's like if you're a dumb idiot like me, you say reprise? I don't remember. Oh, they did a crossover with I, Frankenstein in 2014.
Oh, God. Oh, man. I remember that movie.
She also erroneously announced a crossover with Blade in 2016. I guess that didn't happen either. That could be in development with Marvel, it says. I don't know. Who cares? It's Wikipedia. No one cares. Are we going to talk about weak-minded fools? Well, I'm a more weak-minded fool than you are. You didn't actually watch it. You just thought about it.
I was thinking about it. I was thinking about it. And somehow I ended up watching Pulp Fiction again.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Pulp Fiction. Mike said he would talk about that, but then he had to leave.
Reminds, because you mentioned Weinstein. It's always funny to me to watch one of those movies, and you see, like, the Weinstein credits. Like, uh-huh. Oh, that guy. Oh,
somebody that dude. Somebody posted, I was so mad, and I never realized it, the Weinstein credits, the producer credits on the Lord of the Rings trilogy. I was like, fuck! That just means, like, what did Elijah Wood have to do to get the Frodo role? Like, did he have to see the starfish penis or whatever it was? What did she say it looked like? I can't remember. I see an enemy. I'm an enemy.
Disgusting.
Yeah. But yeah, so Red Letter Media reviewed The Good and the Bad, the Ugly. So, of course, I ended up putting it on over the weekend and watched it in little bits and pieces. That shit is long. I thought I had seen it. I remember it being
really
super
long,
boring, but it wasn't.
And
Pretty sure I confused it with Fistful of Dollars that I think I did watch. It's got the same three actors in it, and they do basically the same stuff, but I don't think those ones were as good, because I was watching this and I was, like, highly entertained. I thought it was really funny. I didn't remember the scam with the turning in the Tuco for the bounties and then scamming the town to get the money back. I didn't remember the walk in the desert. Oh, God, a Jew takes a man on a walk through the desert. It never comes. Well, he ended up coming back for gold. But I remember the blowing up of the bridge, but I didn't remember any. But it was just so funny to watch, like, they're talking about. it makes you wonder about Red Letter Media so much when they start talking about Jews just a little bit. You know, they're like,
yeah, they mentioned that Tuco was Jewish, and I had not even thought about it. I mean, it seems so obvious in retrospect. And he's hilariously Jewish. It puts a different spin on the movie too when you go into it knowing that.
Well, he's just a conniving scoundrel. I mean, he takes the guy out on the walk in the desert to, like, torture him. And then, oops, he realizes that there's a scam where they can get some gold, and that he has to save them so he can help because of a little twist of fate there. Now they're friends again. And he expects them all the way to the end to, like, adhere to a deal. He almost gets killed. And, of course, like, the good guy, Clint Eastwood, lets the Jew off the hook in the end, right? Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
You think he's going to do the needful, and he doesn't. He does not close Ticket. He does not close the deal. He sets the Jew free with his gold, with his share of the gold. It's very sad. I'm trying to find, like, where is that Red Letter Media?
I feel like this movie is sort of like Moby Dick, where if you've read it, you're going to say that, oh, yes, it's a masterpiece. But it's also kind of overly long. It's not something you're just going to sit down and watch every, you know, twice a year or something like that. It's not going to happen.
Well, you could put it on the background and not watch it, and not listen to it, because it's just like the scenes are so great.
Yeah.
Like the look of it
just
is
have
so
it
good.
Running the whole time. Yeah. Yeah, the scenes are great. I mean, it is a masterpiece. It is a masterpiece. And like I was saying, I think between the breaks or something, it's been hugely influential on American culture and probably just popular culture in general. Like that theme music, the trio when they had the showdown. Yeah, when you hear that, it's like, you know what's going to happen. There's some kind of showdown. There's going to be a shootout. It's been used in a lot of commercials. A lot of product has made use of this.
Okay, yeah, here's the bit right here. I found it in the video where they're talking about RLM woke on Jews. Here come these Nazis. They notice
Mike is the bad, yeah. And I am the ugly.
Fortunately, you're not in brownface like the actor in this film. So,
is he in brownface?
That is a Jewish Brooklyn actor playing Tuco, right?
Tuco. I actually just learned this.
I didn't know until after I watched the movie.
And now I am horribly uncomfortable.
The guy's got a ton of credits. Well, that's the thing. It's like, obviously, this is the 60s. It's a different time.
Yeah.
Great performance.
Yeah.
So,
very uncomfortably watching Jewish actors on screen. They're only just now realizing they're Jewish.
I like how they're just admitting, I clicked early life. I mean, we don't click early life around here. That'd be weird, right?
I don't think you're allowed. Are you allowed to do that anymore? I'm surprised he still has an early life. I wonder how they find it out. And I got confused. I must not have been paying full attention. I thought they were talking about the other guy. I thought they were talking about
Lee Van Cleef. Yeah, that made me fall down a rabbit hole where Lee Van Cleef might possibly be a Dutch Jew, but there's not any confirmation, so I don't know.
That fucking nose on him, that goblin, that goblin face of his. I mean, because there he is. They're saying, like, he looks like evil incarnate. And he really does. When I heard him say that, I thought they were talking about him. I was like, guys, tone it down. Because they mentioned, he looks like the devil incarnate walking. Like, how do they find an actor like this? I'm like, guys, you just said he was a Jew from Brooklyn, didn't you? But I was wrong. I want that guy to be Jewish.
Apparently he was typecast a lot, though, as the villain.
I would imagine with that fucking face. Yeah, here's a better shot of him. It's actually when he smiles and bares his teeth, it's like, oh my god. I didn't mean to play audio. Pretty evil looking guy. He's not smiling there. Yeah, that was the other thing they mentioned, is like all these parts of this movie, like all the stuff that this Tarantino just lifted. That's why you watched Pulp Fiction, right? He's like, I'm watching like stuff that Tarantino stole. I might as well go watch a Tarantino masterpiece of like stolen.
You know what
goods.
I didn't notice in any of my previous watchings of Pulp Fiction until this time was that every character has like an encyclopedic knowledge of film. It's just nothing but Quentin Tarantino's self inserts in the entire film.
Can you give me an example? I don't remember that.
Yeah.
But, they all mention a trope from some like movie that they never would have seen. Is that what's
going
on?
Well, you got John Travolta, who knows everything about American actresses ever. Like he can identify them on sight and differentiate between which one is which. Let me see. There's the, what's her name's character? Mia Wallace. She was an actress.
Uma.
She did a pilot. There's a whole thing with her talking about the pilot. Samuel L. Jackson explains to John Travolta how pilots work. Every single character seems to have like all of this knowledge of inside industry things and just film in general. And watching that, it sort of broke my suspension of disbelief. I was like, this just feels like, it feels like a dozen Tarantinos running around this movie.
Yeah.
And then they all kind of have similar personalities. With the dialogue is good, but they're all very snarky and I don't know. It didn't hit the same way it used to whenever I was watching Pulp Fiction. Because I started to see through like some of the very obvious things that Tarantino was doing.
Well, Tarantino has a bunch of little gimmicks and shtick that he puts in every film, and just Pulp Fiction, I think, was the first one that got a widespread. I don't know if it was the first one that got a wide release, or is this the first time everyone saw it and got a lot of word of mouth. I mean, there was so much buzz around it. But you're talking about America in 1990, what, three? When was Pulp? So it's like,
oh, hey, Goy, Herschel here. Are you listening to a free fag episode of The Daily Shower? Do you need a small personal loan so you can afford a paywall subscription? I may be able to help you out. For the very low price of just $10 a month, you can listen to Mike finish his talking points without annoying promotional bits like this one. Log on to therightstuff.biz/paywall and pick the payment option that best suits your white man's agency level. E-checks, money order by mail, or cryptocurrency. Support TRS's efforts in shutting down yids like me.
How do you even know if the buzz was organic? There was no internet then. How do you get national buzz on a film like that? Like, was it actually good? Because you remember watching it, it's like, this shit's all out of order. Everybody's just, it's just like ultra violent stuff. Then you find out that like all of his most iconic like plot points are like lifted from like 70s B movies and kung fu movies and stuff. It's kind of like, but by then like the swindle's already been done. It's too late, and all you can do. But he goes on to have this long career. As one of the last Hollywood directors with an actual vision. It's like, well, the vision is like,
he's an auteur.
Yeah, it's like, he's basically like a I can't think of a really stereotypical like techno guy from the night. It's like, yeah, he's just lifting samples from all your favorite songs. So it's like, maybe he's like Puff Daddy, great record producer for rap music. It's like, well, yeah, I mean, he picks out like already well produced songs and just raps over them. It's kind of like what Tarantino does with film. Like, I'm gonna steal this this three-way shootout. I'm gonna steal this. I mean, he basically ripped off like the yellow jumpsuit or whatever is from that Bruce Lee movie. Which movie was that recently? Kill Bill, but I can't remember what the Bruce Lee movie is called.
Yeah, no. What he seems to be doing is he does a pastiche, and he can't ever seem to transcend doing a pastiche.
Right.
Like, he can't just do a genuinely unique, like, film that's just him.
And then it's like, he's saying nigger in every, he's like saying his nigger as often as he can, but every film he releases gets progressively more and more anti-white. Like the fucking, like, Hateful Eight, and what was the other one he did? Where it's just like, oh, here's another Kill Whitey movie regarding, like, slavery, and we just also have cowboys.
Yeah, well, that's in Pulp Fiction, too, because, hillbilly rapist over here, I'm going to get my devil on his ass, like.
Oh yeah.
They're doing a little bit of that there, and there's a battle flag and some other. It's implied that these are hillbilly racists, essentially.
In Los Angeles, it's a lot of hillbillies.
Yeah,
in Los Angeles.
Now here's something though that did stick out was that this was like early '90s, right?
Yeah.
And there's scenes involving the Mexican migration into L.A. I thought that was kind of unique and interesting because I'm watching this, I'm like, oh wait. This is when Mexicans were first kind of starting to show up in numbers in the United States. Like, it's confined to, like, Los Angeles. It's not throughout the country yet.
I can't think back and remember what my impressions on that were. Because I knew I had, like, no firsthand knowledge of Los Angeles until, like, I didn't go there until, like, the aughts.
Yeah, and by then it's overrun.
And I don't know if it was just, like, because they try to give you the impression that California was always like this. Which is, what is it these days, 30% white, overwhelmingly Mexican and black. But my first exposure, I think, to like there being Mexicans all over L.A. is like, Born in East L.A. Remember the Cheech and Chong movie or whatever? Remember Born in East L.A.? It's like, oh, these are all Mexicans. What is this all about? Because I'm being near New York, like I'm used to like Puerto Ricans as a kid. That's what you would see. And Italians, right? Those, because they're not white, right?
Am I a nigger? Is this Inglewood?
Yeah, right. Yeah, there was an Inglewood, New Jersey, but I couldn't. That didn't work out the same way. Yeah, Pulp Fiction. Tarantino.
It holds up. It's good. It's good. If you've never seen it before, you can probably find it impressive. That's one of the problems I find with all these films. I've seen them so many goddamn times that none of the scenes that are going to really impact you, it's lost all of the impact because I know it's coming. I know what's coming.
Yeah, so then you immediately go out and you watch, what was the other one? Was Reservoir Dogs him? Yeah. I always confuse this title's Usual Suspects and Reservoir Dogs. But Reservoir Dogs was his, and that had a bunch of like the same tropes in it. And then True Romance was written by him, but not directed by him. And same with Natural Born Killers. Do you remember that sick pile
of
shit?
I've never seen it. I've actually never seen
that. Film is a sick pile of shit. Who ended up directing it? Stone? Was it Oliver Stone that did that?
I think it was. Like I know that it exists. I know who's in it, but for some reason, I have never watched it.
Yeah, Oliver Stone took it. So I believe, yes, original screenplay by Tarantino, and it was heavily revised by Stone. And I believe they changed the ending, and so he hates. But Natural Born Killers, the reason they adapted it is like it actually had a coherent narrative and an ending that made sense, which I'm sure Tarantino was very much against. But it had the same like kind of schlocky weird stuff, like people named Scagnetti all over the place. Has anyone ever been named Scagnetti, or is he just like a name? He probably picked it up from some other grindhouse like cop film. You put a Scagnetti in every fucking movie.
Yeah, so what was it? Tarantino's like mom was a failed actress or something, or wannabe actress, and she moved all over the country with him, and he was basically just watching like this kind of pulp material all the time, like kung fu movies, blaxploitation, and crap like that.
Oh my god.
Some spaghetti westerns here and there.
According to this, where am I? Ancestry.com. Scagnetti family history historically evolved his way to... wait, where are we? Oh, the preview of the fucking page has more info than... The Scagnetti family name was found in the USA in 1920. There was one Scagnetti family living in California. Was that like his grandma? Like the Tarantinos and the Scagnettis? So it's like it just lives on in like Tarantino films. That's it. That's so funny. So there's one person. Top male Scagnetti ancestors do for a living. In 1940, there were laborers and the females were housewives. I guess there were two of them. That's pretty goddamn funny.
So you remember Inglourious Basterds?
Yes.
Yet again, another Weinstein Company production there. After that film, I guess he was in Israel, because that would make sense that you would be doing a tour taking you to Israel after doing Inglourious Basterds. But he meets up with this Daniela Pick, who's an Israeli actress, and marries her, and he's got two kids with her now.
Oh, I didn't know.
I thought it was kind of interesting that this was directly related to Inglourious Basterds, though, which is, of course, famously an anti-Nazi film.
So, the Inglourious Basterds, like, his reward was he went to Israel? I figured he would went to Israel and then made that film.
Right.
It's like, it's funny either way, though. It's just like, what a terrible piece of fucking garbage that movie is. They do more shit like that in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is good, except for, like, the anti-Nazi stuff and... the end where they decide to like change history and just have an ultra-violent like fist fight between Brad Pitt and the Manson family. But like, yeah. They do a bit there where they're like, he's got a flamethrower and he's just gonna like just burn down a bunch of Nazis alive. It's just like, just give it a rest. Like, that's pretty edgy, bro. It's like, you know what an edgy fucking action film would be, Tarantino? Like, do a bit where you change history and they win. Have the Nazis win and have it be glorious and not have it be like this horrible, we have to start a resistance movement and kill them. It's like, just have a thing where like the Nazis win and the world is way better off. There's your next edgy movie script you can write. I guess you could do everything out of order, make it not make sense too, but
it sort of almost was trying to do something swinging back the other way with like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, because what is it, the villains are essentially hippies?
Yeah,
so you get to like watch a bunch of hippies get just brutally murdered. Isn't there a flamethrower in that too?
Yeah, that's what I was talking about. He like yeah. DiCaprio's character was an actor in a World War II film where he killed a bunch of Nazis with a flamethrower.
Yeah.
And then he uses the flamethrower to kill the hippies.
See, that confused my brain because he was also in Inglourious Basterds playing that exact role.
Yeah. Yeah, there's not a lot of range in these Tarantino productions. It's kind of all the same.
There's not a lot of range in his characters. That's one of the limitations with Tarantino. As you start to actually look at his characters, like, yeah, you know, once you get past that snappy dialogue, there's really not a whole lot under the hood here.
Yeah, there's just, I could do these crazy violent things. And then he loves it when he gets a little pushback in like the media about how, what is this, what happens if children see this? And he's like, they'll have fun. And he gets all pissed off. I don't know if you've ever seen that interview where some like cat lady movie reviewer is like pressing him on the violent content in his films. And he's just like, it's because it's fun is his like response. It's like, yeah, you've watched a lot of trash cinema from the 70s. And you get to like rehash it with like a big budget and better technique, I suppose. And it's like all love letter to like garbage movies.
Yeah, I mean, so I guess that's one of the things too, with him being sort of an auteur.
How did that just
it's
happen?
Not so much that he's an auteur, it's that he has good technique and no one else does anymore.
He's a remix producer.
Look at what you're comparing Tarantino to. You're comparing him to essentially these modern films that look like they were designed by a committee.
Yeah.
It looks like a marketing director and like a whole panel of people discussed how to do every shot.
I can't watch a modern film. It's just not going to happen. Best I can do is like Red Letter Media gives me an idea of something old to watch. I was watching, you know, what I also tried to watch. I didn't get through it. I started watching Ransom the other day. Remember that with Mel Gibson? Just wanted to watch Mel Gibson. Gary Sinise, like where he refuses to pay the ransom on his kidnapped son. It's pretty funny.
Yeah. I watched Prey recently, and when did the CGI get so fucking atrocious? Like, it's not a great film, but the CGI shit is what broke it for me worse than anything. Because they have a scene where the predator is fighting a bear, and it looks like something out of a video game. And I'm like, I would rather play a video game right now than watch this.
Speaking of Red Letter Media in that film, I like to contrast their comments about the Jewish actor from Brooklyn being in brownface to portray this Mexican versus all of their, like, their weak ass like brushing off of any controversy around Prey, where you have your protagonist is this like little wafer thin like girl that's an Indian, and how all the Indians in the movie had to be played by Indians, otherwise they were going to get in trouble. It's like, do you have any? I don't know. This is funny. Like, oh, I'm so horrified. There's a brown. I mean, maybe they're being tongue in cheek and they don't care, but.
They had like this, I guess this is his first performance, the brother, Dakota something or other, who's Native American. He plays her brother.
Yeah.
And I like that guy. I was like, you should do more. You should do more films. And I wish this movie would give more weight to this character and make this into more of a brother-sister story. It'd be far better than what it actually is. Because it's another one of these films where it's like there's moments that should have some kind of dramatic weight to them, and they just squander it.
Well, the dramatic weight is the ideologically... sort of the ideologically driven like subverting of your expectations of like, oh, look at this little girl, she used her brains and her smarts, she set a bunch of traps and she beat Predator just like Arnold. She didn't have to be a 300-pound Mr. Universe to like beat the Predator. She just had to be a little girl who wanted to.
That's where it goes wrong. And I think that were they the ones that also pointed this out, that you look at Arnold Schwarzenegger in a Predator and he's basically got PTSD. Like, he survived a fucking experience. Like, his whole crew was killed. And she doesn't really have that.
No, she's just stronger. She's just stronger from the experience. I don't know. My kids were watching that on vacation. I didn't really pay attention to
it. Dude, that's the ugliest Predator I've ever seen. And not in a good way.
It was weird looking.
I'm like, what did you do to him? Looks hideous.
The darker, grittier
not
Predator.
Not good hideous, just shitty hideous. Like this is gross.
Ugh.
By the way, though, with the Predators, if you look at their design, the first one, which I think Stan Winston came up with that animatronic, it looks better than everything that came after it, even Predator 2, because of the way that the mandibles like fold around the face, it like has some sort of anatomical function, and they just get worse and worse and more progressively shittier with every movie. I watched Predators recently, and they've got like the Super Predator in there, and it looks terrible. It just looks awful, and of course, it's CGI'd all to hell.
Yeah. Well, people are confused in the comments about why they have hour two first. It's like, well, I don't want to make you have to wait. We're just doing for the flow of the show. The hour with Mike is hour two. So hour one is just with us. You get this for free. You get our movie review for free, folks.
We should just do a movie review show. What the fuck were we talking about? We're talking about the good, the bad, and the ugly. Which, best soundtrack. The score is fucking phenomenal. Or is it Ecstasy of Gold? I think, did Metallica cover it?
No, they use the recording as the introduction to every one of their concerts. So as they're about to come out, they even play that scene where he's getting to the cemetery and spinning the camera around as the show starts. I was actually, my friend was here and we were talking about the production of that, of the guitar sound and that. You know how much I love to talk about guitar tone. They had a Fender Telecaster, bridge pickup, and a Fender Twin amplifier, and just like the tremolo was up, treble was way up, and they actually put the amp, because this is, what year was that? 1960 what? When was that film made?
early 60s, right?
Yeah, they didn't have all these fancy, like, they can't do, like, I can do this. Like, here's my, whoa, listen to that effect. What happened to my voice, you know? They actually, right. they put the amp in a pool, in an empty pool, to get, like, all the reverb that you hear on that recording. That was what they did. I thought that was pretty
that's,
amazing.
That's like recording your drum track in the stairwell.
Yeah, yeah. Like, yeah, like, that was the kind of shit they had to do back then, because all they had was, like, the world around them. They didn't have all this, as much technology as there is these days. And, like, I guarantee you, you'd probably, like, people would spend, like, thousands of dollars trying to get a piece of equipment that sounded like that. You'd be better off just going to the pool with a couple condenser mics and try to capture that echo. It was pretty cool.
They used to use, like, some sort of tape playback for, like, mm-hmm. delay or reverb or yep. something.
You could use a tape deck. You can either make it cause echoes, or it could use it to flange and chorus, whereas, like, you play the same. It's like they use the tape to play the same thing. You have two tapes. And one, you drag your thumb on the flange of the the tape reel, and it slows it down slightly, and you just vary how much pressure you put on it. It makes it go, it makes flanging. They actually call it flanging yeah. because of dragging your thumb on the flange of the tape machine, of the tape reel. I think the Beatles, like, invented that. As much as I know, that's like a saying something nice about the Beatles anymore. It's like, oh my God, they're so overrated. It's like, yeah, well, I'm pretty sure, like, John Lennon was the first guy to, like,
give me two tape recordings and I'll drag my thumb on it. It'll sound cool. It's a great record.
Yeah, all that analog stuff is good. I mean, the same thing with, like, the sort of dovetails the discussion of special effects. Like, the analog, old-school practical effects look good. They hold up. And then it's real. Like, it has real presence, which is what's lacking with CGI shit. There's no impact. There's no presence to it. It doesn't feel like it's actually in the world. It's just a thing projected onto the world.
It's like, if you ask yourself, like, what's worse, a bad like costume, like a bad prop, or a bad CGI? Like, I think bad CGI is way worse.
I can overlook some deficiencies in a practical effect. I absolutely can. I can't overlook stop motion. Now that does look terrible.
Yeah, stop motion is an unfortunate stop along the way of doing the film special effects.
At that point, I'm like, just fucking CGI that. Just help. How about just come back through and fix this? Like if they released a version of Aliens that fixed the alien, like, flailing as it falls through space, I'd be fine with that. Because it looks so bad.
The happy birthday hug scene in Alien. That's good stuff. Yeah, I can't believe we're still talking about movies.
There's nothing wrong with talking about movies. And what I don't like is whenever I see people talking about movies and they just do, like, this really superficial dissection of things, like it's historically anachronistic for that particular firearm to be there. You know, that wouldn't actually be there. And I'm like, fucking who cares? like, are you going to analyze, like, the storytelling and stuff? Or
it's historically, historically anachronistic that, like, there's not a bunch of ethnic diversity and, like, strong women doing it for themselves in this story. It's like, we need to fix that.
Yeah, but my thing is, like, you can have a female lead in a film and it'd still be okay. Like, Aliens works out great.
Yeah, I see. I don't know if I can give, like, an unbiased opinion on that. I was like, would I? If not for, like, the nostalgia of having seen it in my youth, like, would I have an issue with it being Sigourney Weaver?
Get away from her, you bitch!
I don't know.
Well, they sort of play it as essentially, like, she's protecting her surrogate daughter, and it's essentially like a mother bear versus a bigger, nastier mother bear, which is, it's kind of an interesting dynamic. It works.
Yeah, that's on a good certain level.
Motivation. It's better than what they do these days, where it's like a killbot, you know, like a spinny ninja female assassin femme fatale who's just naturally good at everything. I thought that was a great part about Aliens, is they ask Sigourney Weaver's character what she can do, and she's like, well, I can operate this loader.
Yeah.
Because she's essentially like this working class, like, spacecraft worker.
I can be a human I'm a human forklift. Oh, I'm going to use
I'm forklift certified is literally the scene. I got a forklift certification. I can do that.
And the forklift certification, like, saves the day. Well, not really, because the aliens still get in the escape pod and she's fucked, right? And with the cat.
Yeah, that's great to have her using essentially a powered forklift fight this thing instead of a gun, because she's apparently not terrific with guns.
Which she should have done. So basically in the future, like, as we're taught, as you'll see in hour two, like, that basically is, like, the end result of Amazon taking over the country. Like, soon it'll take over the universe, and she's just an international, like, you know, Amazon Prime warehouse worker. She knows how to use the loader.
Go to therightstuff.biz/paywall for your subscription today.
She's loading custom dildos to ship to other planets, or they're bringing new dildos back to Earth from the farthest reaches of space, and they just happen to bring a killer.
I think the problem with that is the character loses all motivation, because then you're just like, you know, just fucking kill me. Is it any worse than working in an Amazon space warehouse?
Do they have the little box for them, for the Amazon space worker to go into, like they had here, to, like the little suicide box you go into?
It's
in
the ejection capsule.
Yeah, right. It's the ejection. Oh wait, no, they have the cryo. They have the cryo tank. I'm just gonna go in here and I'm gonna nap for 50 years. That's how I'm going to cope with my life as an Amazon dock worker.
I'm going to wake up and Amazon will still be in charge.
Yeah, Amazon will still be in charge.
Put me back in.
Oh, God, it's that Jew from Mad About You. He's here to sweet talk me about my... What's so funny is they put him, Paul Reiser, he's in, like, Stranger Things. And
So when I was younger, I was used to him being on Mad About You.
Yeah.
And I'm watching Aliens one day and I'm like, oh, my God, it's that guy and he's evil.
It's like they tried,
like straight up evil.
They tried. It's like he wanted to be redeemed, so they put him in Stranger Things, where he's the mastermind of this program, but he's the good side. He's like running the government program to create these little telekinetic children or whatever, but he's trying to protect them from the evil U.S. government that's trying to. I think at some point they're just trying to shut it down and kill them all.
Man, they should have had him continue playing the villain.
But it's like the whole time I'm watching the show, like I can't let go of the fact that this, okay, sci-fi with Paul Reiser, he's like the Jewish bad guy from the corporation, right? Like, there's no way he's. Yeah. But then again,
and he's so good as the bad guy, because he's just very greasy and, you know, fast talking and trying to cover his own ass.
Did you ever hear like Jay Moore do like, what's the difference between Paul Reiser and Jerry Seinfeld? It's like Seinfeld's, what's wrong with these people? And Reiser's, what's wrong with these people? It's like just the two different the two different Jewish inflections. What's wrong with these people? What's the deal with these people? What's the deal with these people?
Yeah, exactly.
That's a movie I gotta watch again. That Jay Moore movie, Suicide Kings. Have you ever seen that?
I've seen that forever. It's like mercenaries, right?
Well, no, they're all one of them is in debt to a casino or something, and therefore to the mob, and they kidnap Christopher Walken, who's a mob boss or something, and hijinks ensue because there's like they're not killers, but they're supposed to go through with. Killing, well, I can't remember the exact plot, but it's something like that. And I'm pretty sure we're talking all white dudes there, unless whichever actors are happen to be Jewish in that. I don't know, it's been a long time. I think I got to redo that one.
That's one of the funny things to me about watching Pulp Fiction is that there's two MacGuffins in that movie, right? Like, there's the briefcase, and then there's the watch. And he dedicates, like, this whole little scene
to
the watch is significant. And it just comes out of left field, and you're like, what's the deal with this fucking watch?
Does the watch ever come back besides that one scene?
No, it comes back because that's the entire reason that Bruce Willis has to go back to his apartment. Is his what is she like, French Vietnamese, whatever the fuck?
I don't remember his girlfriend.
Girlfriend Fabian.
Yeah,
I remember she's like French, but she
it's
also
a chopper,
looks
honey. It's a chopper, not a bike.
Yeah,
right?
Zed's dead.
Zed's dead.
Yeah, but he goes back to his apartment because she forgot his watch.
Yeah,
and then they set up in advance why the watch is significant. And I just thought it was kind of funny the way that it sort of hits you over the head with like, this watch is really important, and then you forget about it and like, oh yeah. Okay, now I understand why he's got to
go
back.
I forgot about it so much that I never even connected those two. That was a setup and a payoff that I never even connected because it's so like whatever.
Yeah, because it honestly almost doesn't work. It's very far out of left field.
It's like Tarantino just wanted Christopher Walken to give a really weird speech.
Yeah.
That's basically all it's for. And I forgot that movie was like the return of Travolta from the dead.
Yes.
Like Travolta had no career and then suddenly there he was. Yep. Where was Bruce Willis? I guess Bruce Willis was doing better because of the Die Hards, right? Because he was just on some stupid sitcom in the 80s, wasn't he? Moonlighting? Wasn't that Bruce Willis? Or is that a movie?
I don't know. It's weird to watch Bruce Willis acting again. Yeah. His films lately, he doesn't really act.
Well,
because
he has that, supposedly has that degenerative brain disease or whatever. I can't remember what it was called. Aphasia? Alopecia? Yeah, I think it's aphasia.
I thought it was just burnout for being in Hollywood for too long.
No, supposedly he has alopecia. No, aphasia. The other one. Where his brain doesn't work anymore. That's why they have to feed him his lines into an earpiece. He just kind of flubs through them. The thing that's gotten so bad about Hollywood content is there's not even really much there that like makes me think and to deconstruct and like show the Jewiness anymore. Even on that, even ideologically, in its anti-whiteness, it's lazy. It's literally just here's a really shitty script, and we're gonna cast the Burger King Kids Club. And we're just going to use everyone interchangeably, regardless of race, ethnicity, background. Like, nobody's backstory. The backstory of this gay guy is he's gay. Why is he gay? So we can have a gay guy in the movie. Why is this lady, like, an Indian/Mexican, just so that we can have one in the movie? Why is this one? Basically so that it's just not a white person. And why is this white person here just, like, getting along with them? Just because this is what we want you to do. You be subservient to all these this weird fucking motley crew that we've assembled. And just accept it.
Yeah, I watched something. I remember commenting on it somewhere, and I was talking about how it's just very mundane. Mm-hmm. The anti-whiteness is just very just insipid and just lowbrow. It's not like they're trying particularly hard. They just sort of smack you in the face with it.
It's
white people suck.
It's literally just like, it's what do you care-ism at this point. It's like the only, at least like you had like, what are characters recently where... Okay, what's her face in the Blade Runner sequel? Was it Blade Runner 2049? The broad that was in charge of Ryan Felipe there. What's his name? Ryan Reynolds? No. You know who I mean.
The one who was homeschool. Ryan something.
Yeah.
Fuck. He's playing Ken now.
Yeah, that guy. So his like boss there, the police lady, like she's so brutal, it's because she's an insecure like bitch. It's like this task with running this law enforcement. It's like you should be making sandwiches for whoever actually runs this like secret police. Yeah, Gosling. Whoever runs the secret police force. Instead, you're in charge of it. So you have this like, and it was like really like well created character. Like she's like this because she's a broad. It wouldn't be like this if these weren't broads, you know. But that's just out the window at this point. Just interchangeable shitty characters that don't mean anything.
Yeah. Like, see, now you're making me think of Jared Leto being in that film.
Oh, God. And
basically, like, the answer to any movie with Jared Leto is just remove Jared Leto. They, like, the director almost keeps him in check in 2049, but still fails. And Leto is just hamming it up the whole time.
He's just like...
I'm a megalomaniacal evil scientist. I'm fucking crazy.
He runs
slice this bitch open.
He runs a sweet fucking cult, though. I wish we could run a cult like that. They just all dress in white and they go to an island. And everybody just does what he says, and they give him a bunch of money. But only, like, we would be just taking money. We would, like, let's take over the country. We're like, yeah, but it's, like, them for no other reason. And, like, Jared Leto, we like your band, and that you're a weirdo. And he's like, yeah, fuck yeah, you like it. Fuck yeah, you like me. I'm your bridge to, like, spirituality and God. Give me all your money. And they're like, yeah.
Hey, everybody. Jordan Peterson here. I wrote a book about 12 rules for how to live your life, and I have a 13th rule for you. Subscribe to TRS. Go to therightstuff.biz/paywall and pick the payment option that best suits your needs.
Yeah, that was his band. That was like his emo. Yeah, I think so.
Do they still do music?
No, I'm pretty sure he parlayed all of that into this like cult that he runs, and like the songs tie into it somehow. Like, I think it just started off as like the fan club for his band, and then he wanted to destroy something beautiful, so he made them into a cult. Which is like, that's like the best, that's like the most coolest thing you can do, is like, you have a really sweet band, and you turn into a cult. Now it's like, you don't even need a new album, and they don't want one anyway, because it's like, yeah, it's not as good as, you know, you don't, the last thing you want is like, I'm going to put a new album, and it sucks. Just stick to
right,
the classics.
Well, that's a good way to finish off your career, rather than just doing like your has-been, washed-up, like reunion tour.
Yeah.
Or just shuffle out on stage. That to me just seems depressing. Like, just close that chapter of your life and move on.
Yeah. Well, no, you just become a cult leader, so you never have to do the revival. You've been here all the time. It's like, don't let these fans lose interest in you and find something new. Instill in them a religious devotion to what you're about, and then now you're just not just entertaining them, you're giving them like a transformative like existential experience that keeps you hooked for, you know, for the rest of your life, and then you go on a really expensive vacation with him and you wear white robes all the time. Oh, my God.
It's good. It's good aesthetic. Oh, man. What the fuck are we talking about?
I don't know, man.
I think we're talking about the generation of film and media and everything.
Yeah.
Everything's sucking.
Yeah, newsflash. It really is true, though. Like, I don't. Mike was ahead of the curve. He doesn't like to watch anything, but I've caught up to that now because it's just progressively worse and worse. Like, you go look at what, like, the latest bullcrap is that's out. It's like, yeah, I'm just not doing that. I'm going to watch Suicide Kings.
The standard now seems to have dropped down to, I don't hate this movie. Like, you look at RLM, and they're where I am these days. Like, you watch something like, you know, it's not as bad as I thought it was going to be. I was surprised. I thought it was going to suck much harder.
What gets me is how quickly they pile, like, bad on top of worse. Like, they already did a really terrible Predator film. Like, it feels like it was only a year ago. They did The Predator,
the
I think.
Predator, yeah.
And then we've got Prey. And
how did it go so wrong? And Shane Black was the director.
Well, they just have it ready to go. It's like it's all in the chamber. It's loaded up, and their new like 90 IQ like mestizo audience that's out there is like ready to lap it up. There's gonna be a Prey sequel because there's like teasers at the end of the credits, right? Like there's those drawings or whatever. Like there's the cartoon version of the film, and then there's like an extra ending. The cartoon version of the events in the film are shown, and then at the very it looks like Indian cave drawing type shit that recounts the events of the film, and then it shows like a bunch more Predator spaceships coming out of the sky, and that didn't happen in the film. So it's like, oh, is this like the Marvel post credit bullshit? Or like that's like, this is the next film we're gonna do. Here's the next crossover. And then they got to find a way to get Schwarzenegger and Danny Glover to show up. That would be pretty good.
Man.
I'd watch that.
That's the most depressing thing, though, is when they drag them out. I remember I watched, was it Terminator Dark Fate? And they drag out Linda Hamilton. First of all, nobody wants to see Grandma Linda Hamilton. We don't need that.
Oh, man, yeah.
And bad. They drag out Arnold Schwarzenegger, and you just feel bad. You're like, wow, man, it sucks that you guys are being paraded around like a couple of dead skeletons. Talk about a bad film. I don't know how that thing got greenlit. That is one of – I think it's the worst film I've seen in a good 10 years. Certainly the worst film that had that kind of budget behind it. It is unbelievably bad.
And again, you had like crazy woman super soldier, didn't you?
Yeah. Anima stinks.
I didn't see that.
And of course, there's like some sort of stupid half-assed feminist subplot that doesn't work. And the thing is, it's not even like it tries to punch above its weight or anything. It's just lazy, and yet again, it's just mundane. It fails.
It's this current. It's like the current year is even more current than when we started saying that. It was still like when we started saying current year, the stuff was still kind of surprising and shocking. Now it's just boring. Like, it's like I don't know. To make a splash, like Hollywood films should start coming back with like strong white male protagonists and ethnocentric tales that make sense, but what country does that make sense in? Like, that's just not what does America even look like anymore? Can you even put together an American film with an American story and it's white people doing white shit? Like, no. Like, that doesn't even reflect what's going on out there. At least that's what they'd have you believe. That could just be the demotivation, the demoralization talking. Because it kind of works. Like, that's the fun thing about PSYOPs. They work. They do a good job.
The other thing is, me and a guy were talking a while back about how if you're trying to create some kind of product these days, like whether it be a band, a movie, what have you, marketing it has gotten difficult, especially with music. Like, how do you break through into the music scene? Because you don't really have the same network. You don't have the sort of same promotional system. People aren't listening to the radio anymore. Everybody has their own little silo that they stay inside of. And they consume content inside of this like little sector. There's not a whole lot of like transference from one area to the other. There's not a big sort of pond that you can sail out into.
Speaking of music, I don't know if they did this all on purpose or if it was just the case. Because I can't tell if around 2000, I can't tell if the aughts really were like they sort of lost control of the monster and they're just gaining it back throughout the teens and like the rise of like app stores and the ability to censor content and retroactively edit content and remove it. And they're getting a handle back on it now. Cause now it just seems like they just can't, I've talked about this a lot. They just can't recreate. They can't really create a new, not character, but they can't create a rock star. They can't create a big thing that everybody likes because they don't have one place where everybody goes for something anymore.
Exactly. That was the conversation we were having. It's apparently a known problem in the music industry is they can astroturf somebody to an extent.
Yeah.
If they just pour resources into it, they can kind of push someone into the spotlight, but they can't just basically recruit organic talent and just have it come up out of so many
self-publishing options came up after the year 2000 that people could leverage, and some people were good at it, some aren't, but the result of that has been there is just subgenres within subgenres and niches within niches and like small platforms. You can just get into a small platform and you could have like less than 100,000 people following something, and that's enough to sustain that. And those people are doing well, but nothing can really unify around something that we all agree is huge. And I used to think that was a good thing. But now I'm looking around, I've been looking around, like there's no real like cultural touchstone anymore, because they've just sort of, it's like further atomization. They've atomized your interest in mass media, which is kind of amazing, because you think of mass media, that's the opposite goal that you want. Mass media, you want everybody worshiping one thing, doing one thing, going after one thing. But now it's like, it's still mass media, but it's just like there's not anything that's like, there's no one ring that rules them all. It's just kind of all these like squabbling little factions, and so nothing is really big. And then you get like Boomer Rick Beato, like, kids aren't interested in music because they like video games. I don't know if you watched that Rick Beato bit.
I've heard this cope a lot with stuff about, they're just into video games now. They don't want to play with toys. They want to play a video game. They want to do this thing. They'd rather just do a video game.
They're into the game soundtrack. Like, the game soundtrack is a big thing now, which is cool, I guess, but... Rick Beato was good.
Have you ever listened to the Doom soundtrack? Like, what is it, Doom 2016, Doom Eternal? What is the name of the guy who does that?
I was listening to Ranbot the other night, and he started playing Doom. It was just his awful computer noises. I was like, oh, God. Along with, like, the spooky...
Which one?
I don't know. He just loaded some shit up. I was getting ready to go to sleep, and I just put it in my ear, buddy. He's like, oh, I'm going to pick up... Where's my Doom mod? Like, Brutal Doom or something? What did he call it? I can't remember. I thought he was going to put on some like brutal doom metal, but he was playing just doom.
Mick Gordon, that's the name of the guy who did that soundtrack recently that everybody likes. Yeah, because people will put that on and like work out to it.
Well, you remember
hard rock heavy.
Remember that little twink that shot up Chicago? Not Chicago, but some Jewish suburb near Chicago. Was it 4th of July? Was it 4th of July, the guy with he had like the stupid like cyberpunk sunglasses. I made fun of him. So that we watched some of those videos that he made. He like made this little skit where he's like in a classroom and it's like a nightmare. And apparently like we didn't know what that soundtrack was. We were laughing at making fun of like, oh, insert generic horror movie. Wah! Like that was one of the, I think it was like a Call of Duty zombie mod music soundtrack. That's what that music was. It's like, that's what. And that's more unifying to people. Like, everybody knew that because I'm a boomer. I don't play games. I didn't know. That's the best thing.
Well, you would know that if you play that particular game. But yet again, like, everybody is kind of siloed into their own particular subgenre. So I don't know that because I don't play Call of Duty.
Yeah.
Now, if it had been like the Doom 2016 or Eternal soundtrack, I would have immediately recognized it.
I thought everybody played Call of Duty because I remember they played it on The Office, and that was so funny because Jim was so bad at it. No, didn't watch The Office.
No. See, I'm too good to play Call of Duty.
But were you too good for The Office? You're too good for Jim and Pam.
That's just one of those things. You can be an elitist snob about video games now and be like, I don't play Call of Duty.
God, you know what? Speaking of The Office and the in our modern times and downfalls, like The Office did a joke about anal fissures. And it had nothing to do with homosexuals. And I just find that extremely distasteful. It's because like, I saw... Was that on the show we were talking about? The guy who tweeted, like the homos, this, like... He's like, I'm in a faggot dilemma. It's like, do I get Botox in my asshole so I can, like, heal my fissures and bottom more? You know, it's something like that. But run the risk of shitting my pants everywhere I go? Like, that was, like, a really hilarious tweet from a fag. Because he had anal fissures from getting fucked in the ass all the time. And then on The Office, poor Kevin, like the fat white guy, remember him?
You just
don't. Yeah.
No, I remember Kevin.
They were doing.
I've seen some of The Office, just I didn't follow it
They were doing a bit about medical coverage from the Dunder Mifflin Company, and I don't remember why, what the gag was, but like he had people like write down ailments that they needed coverage for, and one of the cards was like anal fissures, and he's like, oh come on, that's not even real, and it's like poor fat Kevin's like, that's my card. It's like, but Kevin's not faggot. Like, you're trying to say that, like, being a fat American slob gives you anal fissures? Like, no, it's a little more to it. Like, he's like, you're not going to tell me Kevin has monkeypox. I don't know. It was just out of left field, but since the discussion of, like, gay diseases came up, that came to mind for some reason.
I remember seeing an article where people were saying that film, like, because The Office is doing sort of this kind of critique of office culture, right? And there was Office Space, the movie. So I saw a book, I mean, not a book, an article where people were saying this was out of touch because you would be so lucky as to have a job like that now. Like, you don't know how good you had it to have your boring 9-to-5 office job where you got to like do the TPS reports and push around a little metal cart full of everybody's mail and stuff.
Hold on.
So that's like where we are now is that is actually the good old days, like working a soul-crushing office job.
Yeah, well, we touched on this in hour two with Mike. He was talking about it. Like, there's not even a piece of cheese at the end of the rat maze anymore. It's like getting the job. Like, yeah, you could be so lucky to have this, like, boring, soul-crushing, stupid job where you, like...
Where you get medical benefits and retirement.
Well, I've been in the office environment, and it really was back then when I was in it. It was about the appearance of being busy. It's like, don't fuck up. And appear to people like you're working hard and doing a good job, because it's not really just about like the perform, like the politics comes into it so much. I remember like I had the last office job I had before I gave up on it. And so like, I'm not doing this anymore. It was like, what happened? Like, I didn't change what I was doing, but my job got easier to do because I had been doing it for quite some time. And this gave them the impression that my team and I weren't giving it our all. It's like, well, no, it just doesn't. We didn't want to have the conversation. It's like we get 8 hours of work done in two now because we've got it. And so when you see us and we don't look like we're busting our asses, it's because we like kind of don't have to anymore.
Right.
You want to charge this? You want to change this by, you know, handing us more responsibility? And do you want to reward us for our efficiency? No. You want to have this like idea that we're just like these ungrateful like corporate drones that don't like our corporate dronehood enough to be hardworking corporate drones, so we can all just get fucked and they'll replace us. That's basically what happened. It's kind of a funny thing.
It's almost like that Puritan like work ethic kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
which is just sort of anachronistic now.
Yeah,
like, why would you have that?
Yeah, like
there's no benefit to having that mentality.
Jewish corporate board like expects Protestant work ethic out of their going. Yeah, that's basically what I was working at a Jewish owned corporation. It was like it was the funniest thing ever. This guy used to. I'm not going into that. I'm not going to talk about a wealthy Jew that I was that might know who I am. Fuck that. Never mind. I'll tell you guys. I'll tell those stories in private at like NJP or something. I'm not putting that out there. I could tell some funny stories about this dude, but
I never really did the office stuff. I was either doing some sort of working class job or something technical. It's probably most of my experience has been technical, like literally some kind of technician.
Well, I was just like following like what do you do in this country? Well, I need health benefits. You only get that by working at some big stupid office where they hand those out for some reason.
I know so many people that are like that. Their entire sole reason for working a particular job is, well, I got health insurance.
And then they will be the ones who are like, we can't have free health care. We'll destroy the economy. You know what? One of the funniest things. So, am I allowed to talk about Larry Ridgway? Part of Larry Ridgway, without going into too much detail, because I don't know what he's put out there. Part of Larry Ridgway's plight, from what I understand, is that he's having a long wait time for the treatment that he needs. And I was always told in previous eras that one of the nightmares of socialized healthcare, whether it be Canada or the UK or whatever, is like you would be forced to wait a really long time to get the care you need because there were limited resources run by taxpayer funding. And if you weren't somebody that was deemed like if you weren't triaged into like an immediate emergency, you could just lay around for like 3 months with your broken ankle. And I think that's what Larry Ridgway is going through right now. And I believe he has health benefits. He's just like out of commission until he gets the work done he needs done. I'm trying to be very vague. Larry, I'm so sorry if I'm not supposed to talk about this. Maybe we'll just say it's a fictional person. It's someone that I know. I'm usually pretty good about that. Somebody I know who's not me.
Yeah.
I've
seen his copes though.
But I think it's public because I think they did a stream for him where they were doing a fundraiser to help him out that I was supposed to show, but I didn't because I didn't get the details in time. But I think that was over the weekend they did that, which is great.
Dude, it is astonishing seeing people trying to cope with the system and make excuses for it.
Oh, hi guys. Here's another pre-recorded interruption, not an actual interruption. I'm just here to remind you, we need you to go ahead and pick up a subscription at therightstuff.biz/paywall. You can use money orders, you can use crypto, you can use eCheck, you can even go to my Odyssey channel, Uncle Spen's Other Tone Stream, and you can use your credit card on there to get around the Jews' banishment of our banking services. That works. So you can do that until you can't. I don't know. But thanks. We'll be right back to the show now.
Like, in what possible way can you interpret this as being a good healthcare system? Because you get the worst of everything, right? Like, you get the wait times, the inefficiency, and then you also get fucked in the ass by paying for it.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a graph of life expectancy and corresponding healthcare expenditures per citizen that was comparing the United States to a bunch of, and like, guess who was the worst on the list? Guess who was the most expensive and had declining fucking life expectancy? It was the United States. It was great stuff.
I saw one that was like showing that, what is it, like 30% of doctors now are foreign born.
No, I believe it.
It's astonishing. And yeah, that does cause problems for your healthcare because they don't speak the same fucking language. They already have enough problems with medical error. You start throwing in accents and different languages and it goes to a whole nother level.
Well, just remember like the old meme of like, marry a doctor or a lawyer. You tell the daughters, whatever. Like, I think it's like an 80s meme, maybe. It's like, well, the lawyers, those are all Jews. And now it's like the doctors, they're all Pajits and Pacific Islanders, and so it's, nowadays we're starting to get niggers. So all the prestige is going elsewhere. It's not even about it's more than just like having a. It's more. It's less about having a functioning system around. It's more like the prestige being robbed from white people and given to these other groups. And then the side effect is, oh, none of it works anyway. But it's really expensive. It's good shit.
And the other thing that's amazing about the healthcare system in the United States is every healthcare provider creates a localized monopoly that totally dominates that geographical area.
Until it goes out of business. Until it closes up. Like, we're closing this medical center.
If you want to open a facility, you basically have to get permission from the healthcare providers that are already there. That's insane. I would like to compete with you. No, you can't.
I remember all these discussions during libertarianism about like fraternal organizations that used to have like healthcare co-op type stuff in the 50s or maybe it was pre-World War II, I can't remember. And then like health benefits became a way around taxes, like that can be part of your compensation and it wasn't taxed. And then they were discussing, well, maybe that should be taxed. It's like, oh God, stop it. Now I don't even know what the deal is. Now you just don't have it.
Yeah, now you just have the worst of all possible worlds. and then if you interact with the system, I don't know, like thinking about dealing with the healthcare system is like thinking about dealing with police. So how bad am I going to get fucked over in this deal?
I haven't seen a doctor since 2006. Maybe even earlier than that. I guess that's based. I don't know. Doctor I saw was white, though. I'm pretty sure he's retired now. I know how old he was.
I've had this conversation many, many times, but you look at the actual cost of what they're providing to you, even stuff that sounds like it should be expensive, and it's not actually expensive, not on the back end, but the price that they're charging versus the services, it's fucking ludicrous.
I remember when the narrative used to be it's because of the free care they're giving illegal aliens. Like, I don't even know if they even bother with that anymore. Because I don't think Republicans even talk about that anymore.
No. No.
And that's a conversation worth having. It's like, how much free care is being given to people who shouldn't be here? Because that was like underneath all the debate was like, it's again, it's like this is where your optics gets you. This is where being a conservative and not wanting to be seen as a white supremacist goes. It's like you're not arguing the actual issue, so you lose. The issue is like the reason, like, Americans don't want to have universal health care because they don't want to do the Sputnik cycle, as you wrote about. They don't want to do the free rides to the hospital for bariatric dindus. They don't want to do the, what was Bulbasaur's old story about the dialysis patient who was drinking gasoline? Like, he wouldn't stop drinking gasoline. It's like, that's why people don't want universal health care. But
God, did he worked in that for a while.
Yeah, but then it's like the upside is like, wait a minute, you know those stories because it's already happening. It's just that you're excluded from, like, if you have the high expectation of your fellow white man, like, you need to have a job if you want to have access to health care. But it's like all these people that don't, like, they just have it. Like, and you're just paying, like, you get the, in your non-universal health care system, our system is you just pay for them as much as you can actually allocate tax dollars or something and have it not just be fake printing money all the time. But if you fail to address the racial issue, the ethnic issue involved in, like, I'm an American, how many weird, like, recently arrived, like, Vietnamese boat people do I have to subsidize their healthcare for in California before I can have some? The answer is all of them. Or whatever the hell else you're working on, depending on what region you're in and what they're shipping to you lately. You know?
Yeah.
Gay!
Well, the other thing is, like, as a white person, I think you feel like you're obligated to interact with the system. Like, oh, I got, you know, if I want to have children, I got to do this whole prenatal thing, and then I got to give birth in a hospital, do the whole nine yards. I got to do all of the pediatric care growing up.
Right.
You know, I don't want to get in trouble with the system by not following the directions here. And then you get financially fucking raped. And like where I live, we got what, Carilion? Carilion literally has some sort of special department in the court system that is just exclusively dedicated to pursuing past due medical bills with people.
Oh my God.
While they basically just consume large areas of Roanoke. You'll see this in a lot of American cities. Like there are entire cities and towns now that are just run by the local healthcare establishment. Like they've just taken over the place. It's like a company town, but for a hospital.
That's a lot of, somebody was talking about Pittsburgh recently. I don't remember who it was. Like that's all that's left of Pittsburgh. Like there's no like thriving industry. It's just like, excuse me. It's like pain management and like healthcare providers. That's like basically this city just runs on like your fucking health ailments.
I mean, you look at Roanoke, like along the Roanoke River. Look at Carilion spreading like an actual cancer. Just buying up property, putting in more buildings, growing and growing and growing. Like, I wonder how much of the local economy is just Carilion at this point.
You know what is like chef's kiss to me? It's like, so you take, remember like the Ronald Reagan, like the seven scariest words, English language or whatever. I'm from the government. I'm here to help or something like that. Like you take that mentality, right? Like every decent white person, the last thing they want to do is have to interact with the system. They don't want to have an insurance claim. They don't want to go to the DMV. They don't want to just like anything institutional with any institutionalized authority. They don't want to have to go and use it to the point where like they don't want to, if they get in a bad way, they don't want to sign up for any public assistance. They don't want the stigma of, you know, people that like don't want to get unemployment used to be a thing. I don't even want to do that. I'd rather have a job. I don't want to check, even though you've like your every paycheck has had unemployment benefit premiums taking out of it. Like you don't want to go make a claim when you're down on your luck. You just want to get on with your life. They've managed to turn healthcare into that same exact kind of thing. That's just like a big faceless, soulless institution I don't want to have to interact with. It's like if I can just be sick at home by myself, so I don't have to go deal with these fucks. And they did that. I mean, they basically sealed that with the COVID response. As basically for so many people, they want nothing to the point where people like deny long held medical knowledge. Like that can't be true. That's just a scam. They're just going to kill me if I go in there. And it's like that's where you are in America. And who's believing that?
I mean, COVID like took the alienation of interacting with that system and it magnified it to such a degree, and it made it so dehumanizing. Like, put on your mask.
Yeah.
Don't bring your family in here. I mean, I know that you're going through some sort of crisis and you'd like your family to be there, but no, we're not doing that.
Oh, you don't trust this like treatment guideline that's going on here? Okay, we're going to put you over here in the corner and we're going to do stuff that we know is going to be harmful. We're going to ignore you for 6 hours over in the corner of the ICU over here since you don't like you don't like whatever the thing they're doing. And by the way, if you really get sick, we'll put you on a respirator and that'll kill you for good.
It's like that cynical corporate culture we were talking about where nobody wants to actually do their job anymore, but it's in healthcare now.
Yeah.
Like everybody is a burned out mercenary.
And nobody wants to be a customer either. No one wants to be a client. Yeah. That's the worst.
Yeah.
Like, oh God, I got to go deal with these fucks.
Someone was telling me they're working in a rural ER somewhere, and one of the nurses that had been there for like 6 years was apparently well liked. She just blew her head off like a few nights ago.
Like our audience?
She committed suicide.
They're going to listen. They're going to listen this hour, and they're going to blow their heads off. This is good. This is not good for the paywall shilling. Like, listen to the more of this depressing, suicidal commentary about how fucked the country is. There you go.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what to tell people, because like, what do you do when you're in a situation where there essentially isn't anybody to trust? No, any social networks. Everybody is very atomized. Like, if you have a legitimate healthcare problem, where do you go? You know, I guess you go into your racist chat group and you hope you find somebody who knows what they're doing.
Oh no, people are confused about the paywall RSS feed. Don't worry, bros, it'll be there. It's gonna work. It's gonna be fine. We'll get through this together.
I've never used an RSS feed.
I think you just get the show at the on the site too. It's gonna be there. Upon entering the paywall URL of my RSS feeder, which I've never had to do before, the name of the Daily Show came with 3 not-so-new shows. Must have done something wrong. I don't know. Very strange. We'll get through it, though. I don't know what else we're going to do. What else are we going to do today? We've done an hour and 10 minutes. 110 and never again.
We've basically made it. And I don't know what is in current events that is really super important. We haven't talked about. We talked about an hour two, actually.
Yeah, we did. We did our loyal Duganist posting about the outrage of assassinating his daughter, and a little bit of that stuff. But it was kind of rough. This was a rough weekend. Mike was away. I was not engaged with the media or the news very much. I looked at it a little bit, but we talk about that in hour two.
Yeah, I wasn't super engaged because Saturday I went out and I did 82 miles on my road bike in 4 hours, which is a personal record for me. It's like 20.3 mile per hour average, something like that. It's fucking flying.
We were having We were having a family celebration over the weekend. We had several guests and a lot going on, so I was not. I was also eating a lot and drinking a lot, which is not very good. I'm still intermittent fast. Actually, that's not true. I didn't intermittent fast, Alex. In the break between hour two that we haven't recorded yet. In this hour one, I ate a bunch of carrots and broccoli. That was all I had.
That's got fiber. That's good for you, right?
Yeah. I just didn't want to be starving, but I also didn't want to eat. I didn't want to have like, I was like, I'm gonna take a minute off from like, just like shoving meat down my face. Like, you must have protein. I have to start cycling and twink maxing. I said I was going to do that, but then I didn't. As soon as I announced on the show, I'm going to start twink maxing. I'm going to diet. I'm going to get skinny. I didn't do that. I started eating breakfast, and I started drinking the Fruity Pebbles whey, and now my arms are kind of huge, which is cool. Never had that before. I actually put some mass on certain muscle areas, but I'm also, like, fucking fat as hell around under here in my gut. It really sucks. I don't know what I'm going to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking I may clean up my diet a lot in September and see if I can lean out some.
But it's
even though I've rode a lot this year, like I've rode 4,600 miles, I think.
Jesus Christ!
However, it's not hitting like it used to. Like I used to, if I did a bunch of miles, man, I would slim down to the point where this time of the year I would usually be really skinny.
You're just an addict, man. Your tolerance is up so high. You're like Kurt Cobain with that lethal dose of heroin in the system, but you're not dead until you suck start the shotgun. You know. You're like George Floyd.
Is that what they said? Did he actually have a lethal dose of?
Oh yeah, I've heard that several times. And there's like discussions open up of people who've never done drugs before about tolerances and this or that. And someone goes, it doesn't matter how much you've taken. Like the human body can only process. Blah, blah, blah. It was like, well, but then again, it's possible that somebody just drugged him up to kill him and then shot him in the head too. We don't know, and we don't care because fuck that guy, Kurt Cobain.
Seems like the lead overdose is probably much worse than anything.
Yeah, right.
Lead poisoning.
Make that bit, and was it Back to the Future 2?
You know, the thing is, at least when you had those 90s alternative bands where somebody died, usually horrifically, of drug overdose or suicide, at least they don't do the reunion tour. At least they don't just slowly disintegrate and just become kind of shameful. You remember them near the top of their career.
Well, I mean, fast forward to later this year, Pantera. Half the band's dead. But they're have you not heard about this?
No.
Phil Anselmo, the singer, who's basically estranged from the main guys who did the, you know, the brothers are dead. Vinnie Paul and Dime, they're both dead. And basically, they went to their graves basically hating Phil Anselmo, as far as I know. That relationship was completely poisoned by heroin. He didn't die of heroin. They died of other stuff. And, like, the bass player and the singer are going to do a tour with, I think, they're going to get Charlie Benante, the only non-Jew from Anthrax, on drums, and Zach Wilde on guitar. And they're actually going to call it, they're going to call it, like, the Pantera tribute or something. They're not going too far, but still, it's like, wow. Talk about
it.
Was
it, like, 10 years ago Zach Wilde was just in every band at some point?
Oh, he's always, like he's got so many buddies that are, like, famous, he'll just do whatever project.
Yeah.
I'm not really a big fan of his, but that's just a funny thing they're going to do.
I just sort of associate him with being like a mainstream, like butt rock type musician.
Well, yeah, because of Ozzy. He got big because he, you know, he joined Ozzy in 92. Or no, he actually joined Ozzy in 89, but they hit it big in 92 with No More Tears. And then it just kind of petered out, and now Ozzy's a fucking joke. And he did his own band that never got big, but like that level where you could just do music and sustain just enough to like have a living off of it, I guess. Helps when your old boss gets a reality show and he lets you come on it here and there. He was on the Osbournes a little bit.
Was he?
Yeah, he had a couple spots where he'd show up on an episode. It was kind of funny.
That's just unbelievable to me that Ozzy is still releasing vocal tracks.
I know.
Like, what the fuck?
It was like, what's worse than the shameful reunions, like the never stopping. I'm 80 years old, I'm still doing it. Even Black Sabbath had the sense to like, all right, this is the last one. And that was several years ago. It was like 8 years ago they did their last album. I'm like, okay.
It makes me feel old because I remember being a kid and being like, oh, this Ozzy Osbourne track just came out. And I'm like, wait, I'm getting old now and he's still releasing music. What the fuck? Almost 40 and I'm hearing a new Ozzy Osbourne song?
It is 2022. I'm hearing an older, more decrepit Ozzy Osbourne. Well, there. I think we've run the gamut there. We didn't deny the Holocaust once. Didn't happen. I still have my empty mug is right here. It's fake. So
that's my mug. This one is depressing.
Oh, that's the monuments. God damn it.
Yeah.
That's a nice mug.
The fucking monuments. Yep, that's a nice one of them is gone mug. And some niggers are gonna try to melt it down.
Yeah. All right, well let's close out hour one and we'll join it with hour two and then we'll have a show and I'll do this this paywall free fag experiment. See how it works out. Hopefully we don't make everyone mad. I'm going to have a laugh at it, though. It's going to be funny. But I probably shouldn't. The business model probably shouldn't be what makes me laugh. I think we'll be all right, though. So thanks, Alex. And Mike's coming up an hour, too. We'll see you guys.
I'm going to mow some grass.
I'm not. It's pouring rain. Oh, it looks like it might have stopped. But everything is soaking wet, so maybe some grass will grow now that it rains so much. But that's that. All right, let's get out of here.
You're listening to The Daily Show Up. As racist and sexist as they can be. We're gonna offend you, isn't it funny? La,